How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast, bringing you the latest from the world of sports, DFS, and gambling. With over 5 years of hot takes and millions of downloads later, I guess he's been doing something right. Now, sit back and listen to one of the sharpest minds in the game. Here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
Welcome to the show, folks. It is NFL Sunday, so we're going to get into the football action. UFC last night kind of went as expected with some of the results, so won't dive too much into there just because of how busy we have to get into the slate of games. But I will say, you know, overall, good pay-per-view, so watch the clips and videos that get posted if you didn't see the pay-per-view. Not surprisingly, John Jones non-committal on facing Tom Aspinall. Now that he's defended against Stipe, not remotely surprised, but disappointing nonetheless that we still can't get confirmation of that matchup. But you know, we go from there. But ahead for this NFL Week 11, I'll be honest, this is a week where we could see very low-scoring games and just one outlier. And I will say the outlier game that you got to look out for is this Detroit Lions hosting the Jags. I mean, the Jags are coming into this game just reeling. Mac Jones starting again for Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence having some issue with his non-throwing shoulder. I honestly think he's being shut down. It just feels as though the Jags are throwing in the towel on the season. I mean, they're already 2-8. It's not like there's some turnaround that's going to happen with the team. So this just feels like a give-up spot. And we know the way the Lions play, they don't really believe in throwing in the towel or waving a white flag when it comes to running up the score on teams. So there's a real chance that the Lions put up close to 50 points today, and it's not going to shock me because the Jags aren't moving the ball that effectively. You saw how much they struggled against Minnesota, who was struggling last week to put up points, but Jacksonville couldn't punish them. You know, this is a spot where the Lions are favored by 14 and 13 and a half, but I could easily see them winning this by two touchdowns, not remotely surprising. Three touchdowns or more, not remotely surprising. Like, I think the Lions are going to blow this team out. And so I start there because the Jags are bad through the ground and the air. So, you know, this is a spot where you can consider both David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs in your player pool. Amon-Ra St. Brown definitely in play. Jared Goff, even though he threw five interceptions on Sunday Night Football, absolutely in play for me. I think it's the spot people should be targeting. Now, I know folks will be talking up the afternoon portion of the slate with the Chiefs and the Bills, but the reality of the situation, in my opinion, is the fact that you've got a scenario where a team that's not going to bench their starters against a team that, for all intents and purposes, has given up on the year, I think this is a very worthwhile spot to kind of focus on loading up on the Detroit Lions pieces, and they're not really being talked about. A lot of talk's been centered on Christian McCaffrey being back, and notably so. It's like it's a good spot for the Niners against Seattle, and if George Kittle misses, it's even more workload for Christian McCaffrey, who was not really eased back. They threw him into the fire. Like, he was playing 70% of the snaps, so McCaffrey's back. To me, it's just a matter of, with some of these pieces, that, yeah, I can easily see this being a good environment for the 49ers pieces. I just want to be clear that, by and large, I think the Lions are just going under the radar, and I think it's a mistake. I think, realistically, we could see a scenario where the Lions are the highest scoring team on the day, and it's not particularly close from fantasy purposes. So, to me, that's where I think teams can be a little bit more deliberate in terms of roster construction and just build for a blowout scenario with the Lions. So I'm on Ross St. Brown's 8K. You got Jahmyr Gibbs at 7,300. You got David Montgomery at 6,500. Like, Montgomery, you know, is going to get 12 to 15 touches a game, and he gets all the red zone carries. So, you know, I think Montgomery's way too cheap. Just way too cheap. So, again, I think this is a scenario where, you know, a lot of folks are going to be focusing on Christian McCaffrey, and deservedly so. But, you know, the Niners, the Dolphins, I think they're getting a lot of attention, which I don't think is the worst idea in the world. But, man, I just look at this situation where you got the best offense in the NFL playing the Jags, and, you know, the implied team total is 30, and people are worried about blowout script. The Lions don't bench people, and Laporta's out. Like, I'm telling you, it's like, to me, the Detroit Lions are the best spot for fantasy purposes in this slate. I, you know, we'll go through the NFL picks themselves, but I just think from a fantasy perspective, the Lions are just not getting enough attention in terms of ownership and all the characteristics that you would want with teams. So for me personally, I think there's going to be quite a bit of concentration. Now, will I have Jared Goff as my overall number one? I might still just keep Brock Purdy ahead of him or Bo Nix ahead of him just because of the rushing upside with those other guys. Because, you know, with Goff, you're only going to get passing yards. And as I said, because of how great of a running matchup this is for Gibbs and Montgomery, I could see Goff not making it into my main lineup as QB. But, man, I think the pieces on the Lions between Amon-Ra St. Brown, David Montgomery, and Jahmyr Gibbs, it's just too tempting not to have them in the lineup. And there's value across the board in this slate. I mean, you've got Juwan Jennings for the Niners at 5,300. You got Davis Allen basically taking over the number one role at tight end for the Rams at 2,500. He's going to be incredible chalk across the board. He's going to be highly owned, but he allows you to fit in so many pieces that it's 2,500. It's not just to fit the most popular plays. It's to fit in all these expensive plays and get a little bit more creative across your lineups. It's just the flexibility he allows for. So, to me, I think a lot of a blowout script with the Lions makes a ton of sense for lineups today, and we kind of go from there. But, yeah, that's where I was kind of landing from a fantasy perspective in terms of some of the plays. I will say for regular fantasy, one play, and he's still available on waiver wires for some reason, Ricky Pearsall for the 49ers is getting more acclimated into the offense, getting more reps. Obviously, Brandon Ayuk done for the year, so his usage has only increased in the last few weeks. Pearsall just makes too much sense, along with Jennings. Debo's banged up still. I just think that there's a lot of opportunity. I mean, Pearsall's only 4,900 on DraftKings as well. There's just so much value in terms of some of these plays. But, yeah, that's for regular fantasy. I would still say for DFS, I prefer the Lions across the board. But, you know, hard to go wrong with some of these pieces. And I mentioned Davis Allen, like, again, available in over 70% of fantasy leagues. He's the number one tight end for the Rams, given Higbee's injury and Kobe Parkinson getting beat out by Allen. So just something to keep in mind overall. But, yeah, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to get into the picks because it's a busy amount of games today. So we'll be right back after this, and stick around.
Don't go anywhere. The Fantasy Throwdown Podcast will be right back after our sponsors pay the bills.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome back to the show. Hope you got your popcorn ready.
Hey, Kelly. So, we have a weekend without the Giants. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, the place has been...
I thought you'd be more excited, but you just seem exhausted.
Oh, please. Yeah. The problem I have with the Giants is that so much of this is self-inflicted because we saw this coming. And, you know, I blame some Giants fans because I couldn't believe after that one season, so many Giants fans are saying, we can't let Daniel Jones go. We got to pay him. We got to pay him. And I'm like, are you guys seeing what I'm seeing? Because I'm not seeing a guy that we should be paying a lot of money. I saw a guy that we should have given a deal and tell him, if not, you see, what they did with Saquon Barkley, they should have done with Daniel Jones. Say, go out there and see if you can get something. And I could bet you he would be right back with the Giants with a much better deal for the Giants. And you know, so that they could get out from under if they wanted to. And they would have still had Saquon Barkley. Yeah. But this is just me. Yeah.
The truth of the matter is, as much as fans think they follow their teams, they don't actually watch football in the detail that they're supposed to. So that's one issue, is that a lot of folks that talk as though they know what the hell they're talking about don't actually know what they're supposed to see. So they see something happen and they automatically assume one thing when there are any number of factors that are going on into play that they completely miss. And the issue that was always going on with Daniel Jones, even in the 12-win season, was the fact that he wasn't throwing the ball deep. It was a lot of RPO action and basically short to intermediate passing routes, and then him scrambling on designed run plays. Once teams figured out that they were going to spy on Jones and not give him those run plays, it forced Jones to actually have to adapt and be a better passer. And he has shown that he has neither the confidence nor the skill set to throw the ball deep. Because the sad part of it all is, you saw last year when Jones got hurt, the passing game improved under... Like, I mean, you can't be serious. Tommy Cutlets was a better passer than Daniel Jones. And it wasn't close. It wasn't even close. DeVito should never be in the same conversation with Jones in terms of deep ball passer. But because Jones has no confidence throwing the ball down the field, technically... That's why DeVito won the games that he did for the Giants. Because you see, with even mediocre QB play, the Giants team can win. But if you can't even throw the ball down the field, it makes it much easier to just defend you. And you see it constantly with the Giants. The Giants have to manufacture long drives just to even score points. They can't do explosive plays because Jones just does not have the confidence to consistently throw the ball down the field.
And, no.
You know, even when it doesn't, like, and people always say, it's like, oh, well, you know, he threw the ball down the field, but it wasn't threatening. Like, the thing with Jalen Hurts that people fail to realize is that the reason why Saquon is looking so good, and believe me, Saquon's playing great, but part of the reason why is that Jalen Hurts can vertically challenge you down the field. So even if Devonta Smith or A.J. Brown aren't having big games,
you always have to be wary of the passing routes and down the field of where they're lined up. So when you have guys having to take the step back, they can't be in the box to basically crowd the line of scrimmage, which is what Saquon was running into. Saquon had four straight years of just running into a brick wall because of the fact that Daniel Jones can't stretch the field. And it was obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem. And I don't understand how people never saw this. It's like
they just choose not to talk about it. Like it is what it is. But anyway, let's get to the games because we could spend all day talking about the Giants and how pathetic they are. So first on deck, we have NFC North matchup. The reeling Chicago Bears, who, for reasons that I still can't figure out, haven't fired Matt Eberflus yet, hosting the Packers. The Packers, 6.5-point favorites on the road.
Yeah, I'll take the Packers with the points. It's not ideal because, I'm disappointed in Jordan Love. With some of the throws that he tries to make, I don't know what's going on in his head sometimes. You know, like he thinks he can do anything and he can't. You know, but I still think.
I'll tell you exactly what the issue is with Jordan Love. Jordan Love believes he is a top five QB in the league. Jordan Love is realistically a top 12 QB in the league. And that's not to say that he can't win games. But the truth of the matter is that Jordan Love is more of a byproduct of having a good roster around him. The same roster that Aaron Rodgers just, like, slammed repeatedly that wasn't good enough. But we'll get to Mr. Rodgers later today. But, as long as Jordan Love stays within the offense, the Packers covered it pretty easily. My thing, and some people say this line is wide, the issue is Chicago's offense is so broken right now that, like, they were actually saying, because they fired Shane Waldron as the offensive coordinator, but they were saying, Caleb Williams is still going to be a starter. I would hope so. Basically, you gave one of the more rudimentary offenses to him to work with. It's not working, but the first couple of weeks of the year, he's athletic enough to get by, even though your system sucks. The only reason why Caleb would ever be benched in this scenario is if Caleb was hurt. But the reality of the situation is, he's just getting beat up because they are that bad at scheming an offense for him. It's not Caleb. Like, to me, it's like, my issue with Caleb is, and I said this before, I knew at a certain point people were just going to turn on Caleb and not actually pick up on what's going on with Chicago because Justin Fields was dealing with this same issue the entire way through. There's not an actual structure in Chicago. It was clearly obvious that they had issues, like, fundamentally from an offensive line and personnel standpoint, and the fact that, scheme-wise, they just had no imagination. And so they blamed it on Justin Fields not being a pocket passer. And people bought that storyline to scapegoat Justin Fields. Fields, who can't throw out of the pocket and can move around, but again, he is hamstrung by the fact that he lacks offensive line protection. The run scheme is very rudimentary at best. They don't actually have the smoothness to execute the offense, even to utilize their skilled position players. So people are now blaming that Caleb might be the worst pick in a couple of years. And it's like, okay, so we slam Bradshaw, we slam Caleb. Where does it end? Because at a certain point, some of these teams being this dysfunctional needs to get called out more as to it's not the pick, it's the organization. But but you can't criticize NFL organizations too hard because that's when the NFL cracked down on the media for being too controversial. But the reality situation is Chicago, even though they're 4-5, realistically, it's a 2-8 team. This is a 2-8 team. The only reason why they're 4-5 is because they have so much talent on that roster. That's why they got four wins. But, like, realistically, this is not a good team.
Look, let me tell you something. I know a lot of people got down on Archie Manning, you know, what he did with his two sons. And a lot of people around the NFL still, you know, kind of hate Eli and Peyton because of the way Archie handled it. But you know what? They actually should make Archie the commissioner of the NFL, because certain teams do not deserve number one picks. You understand? Because they will wreck the careers of these guys. I mean, between, and I'm not saying that Trubisky would have been a world beater or Justin Fields would have went, but you know, but they had no chance once they put him in Chicago. And now you're seeing that with Caleb Williams, and people are still kind of like, well, I don't think he was as good as a, well, let me tell you something. You could have had Tom Brady, you could have had, you know,
it's the truth. Patrick Mahomes would have failed in Chicago.
You have to figure out a way to have Sam say, oh, you know what? I think he should have played baseball because he's not as good as we thought. It's not the guy. It's the place. It's the organization, because, look, you're talking about an organization that made Brian Urlacher say, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm done.
I mean, it's the truth of the matter. It's like, and we're going to get to it in the next game, but what's your take on this one? Are you thinking the Packers side, or do you think the Bears could somehow cover this?
No. I'm taking the Packers. I'm not going down the road with the Bears, because you know we saw this coming when they took a number one pick and put him with a lame duck coach. You know, so let me tell you something. Eberflus should have been fired the day after that Washington game when he said the 15 yards didn't matter. That statement is a fireable offense. Because without the 15 yards, how the hell is he going to get with the end zone?
He lost the locker room. He lost the locker room with that statement. They can say whatever they want. The season was over as soon as he made that statement. It was such an idiotic thing. He lost a lot.
Unless you never went to school and learned addition and subtraction, you know how idiotic that statement is.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on, because I know we got to pick catch up. But Detroit, 13.5 point favorites at home against the Jags. And I will say this again: tail two teams. Detroit, bottom feeders for years. The Ford family finally just says, we're just going to stay out of the way. And they usually do. They usually stay out of the way. They don't meddle like with some of these other owners. But at least they brought in folks to at least change the culture for once. And changed it, just worked out in a positive way. Because as much as everyone mocked the Dan Campbell hire, and believe me, Dan Campbell's a weird dude. But the one thing you could say about Dan Campbell, he does command the respect of his players. And that is basically tantamount to one of the most important things you can ever do in any professional or sports setting, is have the respect of the people around you. Because when you watch the Lions play, they may not always play clean. And you saw it last week, because that was one of the sloppiest games imaginable against
you. Yeah.
But they never quit. Like, they kept competing. And a lot of times you see teams say, you know what, we'll get them next week. But the best teams are the teams that still just keep plugging away to try to find a way to win, even when they are having a D or a C-minus game at best. And they just keep trying to plug away. So to me, I think this is just one of those spots where we got a Jags team that's more than ready to quit on Doug Peterson, going in to play the Lions at home. To me, I know 14's a lot, but realistically, it's Mac Jones against a pass rush that can get to him. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Mac Jones has a pick six in this game too. So
No. And the thing about the Lions, the way they play, they play like a college team that, you know, you say you're running up the score. As long as the game is going on, they'll play to score. So I think that's what the people who put the line is looking at, that they will keep scoring. It's not like, oh, we'll take your foot off the gas. It's the third quarter. It's the fourth quarter. No, they'll play to score. So, yeah, I as wide as that line is, I'll take that, the Detroit side, because that Jag team, unless the team is saying, oh, look, we gotta get rid of Trevor Lawrence, which you can't, and now that he's, I think he's out for today.
Yeah, he's supposed to be out for today. I'll be honest, and like if they can say it's a conspiracy theory all they want, they knew the season was over anyway. I think they just kind of shut down Trevor Lawrence, saying that his shoulder was bad, but I'm not convinced that he can't play. I just think they look at it and say, it's like, why would we risk him getting any further, injured any further when the season's over? That's how I feel.
Yeah. And it might be a wise decision, because I think Trevor Lawrence needs to reset. Because, I don't know what's going on in his head right now, but, Trevor Lawrence has too much talent to be this lousy. It's you know, unless he's gonna be, you know, I mean, we've seen this movie before with some of these quarterbacks with a lot of talent that never kind of, you know, give it the effort on the field. I know he looks like a California surfer, so I think that may be prejudicing me against him. But he kind of looks like, we get him next week. You know, that kind of a way.
I'll put it to you this way. Everyone always likes to compare Trevor Lawrence and Herbert together. My thing is, Herbert, while he does lose quite a bit just because of how dysfunctional the Chargers have been.
I'm not going
to
take it.
I never question whether or not Herbert wants to compete. He gets hurt, but I never have to question whether or not Herbert's trying to compete every time he's in the game. There are very, very apparent times when I look at Trevor Lawrence and I think he's checked out of the game. And it's like, to me, I think that's the more damning thing about Trevor Lawrence, that I look at his game tape and honestly, it feels as though he's checked out in a lot of his games. And it wasn't just this year. I'm going back multiple years. It's like, you know, he got the pass in his rookie year because of Urban Meyer. But even if you watch some of the games he played when they were going to the playoffs, he would have games where he just didn't look like he was interested. And I'm sorry. It's just one of those things where I don't think he's always dialed in. It's like, you know how I kind of look at him? And it's one of your favorites. It's like, it's a baseball pitcher when he doesn't have his A game. And that he just goes through the motions. He reminds me so much of A.J. Burnett.
A.J. Burnett.
That is what Trevor Lawrence reminds me of more than anything else. Sharp the first couple, and he just doesn't feel it. It's like, I honestly think he checks out of games. And like, it's to me, I think it's a glaring issue that, you know, they got to get a coach in there that can actually be hard on him to develop him. Because like, I think Peterson's a player's coach, and he's he's generally tends to be more laid back. I think they kind of have to get an a-hole kind of coach to like be hard on Trevor Lawrence. Like that's my feeling, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's keep moving. Yeah, I really don't want to. I don't even want to bet this game. I don't even want to watch this game. This may show up on Red Zone. Miami 7.5-point favorites at home against the Raiders.
You know, I kind of lobbied for Antonio Pierce to get the coaching job. I think he's done a lousy job.
Here's the thing. I know the Raiders don't have a lot of talent, but it does feel as though Antonio Pierce has antagonized a lot of guys in that locker room. Because, you know, it just feels off that after the first month of the year, this Raiders team just stopped giving effort. And, you know, it's a weird thing. It's just like, it reminds me, you know, and I really try to give benefit of doubt, but like this reminds me of the Mike Singletary years when he was coaching the 49ers, where he would give these speeches and it's just like, eventually the players just tune him out. And it's like, I feel as though this is like a Mike Singletary situation. So we'll see, but it's like, I'm kind of worried on the back half stretch of this season with the Raiders that, you know, these games just start looking more and more like blowouts.
Yeah, because it's, you know, that comparison, I never thought about that, but you know what? It's the perfect thing, because I think sometimes we always assume that because a guy was a really hard-nosed player, a no-nonsense player, that is going to translate to him being a coach like that. And coaching, you need the no-nonsense approach with discipline and stuff, but you also have to be a kind of part-time politician also. And I don't think they get that part, you know? So, yeah, it's the best comparison I could think about, because I would have picked Mike Singletary to be my coach because I thought he would have been a great coach. But it's not always the same. You know, it's not always the same. When you listen to some of his speeches, you're like, who the hell is he talking to? You know? So, it's the best comparison. I lobbied for him to be the coach, but it's just not working out at all. It's not working out. Yeah, and you know, and some of it is self-inflicted, you know?
Yeah, so to me, this is more an indictment on the Raiders. I still don't think this Miami team is any good, but realistically, this Raiders team, they don't stop the run. They don't stop the pass. They can't score. I don't know. But it's like, maybe Miami just drops the ball, but there's been nothing from the Raiders to indicate that they're going to be able to cover this game.
Yeah. Well, the thing about, you know, well, I'll stay away from the game, but is Miami defense going to play like they played last week? Because I haven't seen that defense before I saw them last week.
I'm saying the Monday Night Football game was the best game that defense has played all year. So we'll see if they show up today.
If that defense,
because to me this is like one of those fake games, because like I just don't see where the Raiders are scoring it. I can't see where the Raiders scored 17 points, which is again Giants level of embarrassment, but that's the situation where the Raiders are in. It's like, I don't see where the Raiders score 17 points. And with Miami having Tua back, they should be able to score at least 20 to 24 points. And so that's why I think they just cover this game. It's like, I'm not seeing where the Raiders get to 17.
Yeah. Like I said, I think this Raiders team is, you know, like, guys are looking at the almanac and, looking at, how much power games we got? Can't wait for this shit to be over.
Yeah. All right. Rams traveling to New England to pay the Patriots. Rams 5.5-point favorites on the road.
I like the Rams. The only problem I have, I don't know what the hell happened last week. That offense couldn't get out of their own way. I I'll take the Rams because I don't think this is going to happen 2 weeks in a row, that Stafford is not going to be able to throw, you know, touchdowns and settle for field goals. I don't think that New England defense is going to play as great as that Miami defense. How cold is it in New England? That's the only problem I have.
I'm glad you brought that up because, realistically, it's actually going to be a pretty decent day at Foxborough, because it's going to be low 50. So, like, all things considered for this time of year, it's balmy in Foxborough.
I'm going to take a chance on the Rams because I don't think they can play as bad as they played last weekend. And they know this is it. This is it for them. If they lose this game, forget postseason. It's still going to be tough, but, you know.
So here's the way I look at it. The Rams struggled to get their house in order Monday night against the Dolphins. They got to travel cross-country for a 1 o'clock game against New England. New England still has some talent on defense. The struggle that the Rams had last week on Monday night, I don't think necessarily they fixed it in a couple of days. Like, maybe you could say it was an off night, but, you know, I hate it when teams have to do Monday night football and then have to do cross-country trips. So, like, I always feel like that second half leg, it looks even worse than the first half. So,
I know.
This is not an indictment on, this is not really an endorsement of New England, I should say. It's more of an indictment on where the Rams, like, kind of gave away a game they needed to have against the Dolphins. And so, while I think the Rams win, that 5.5 scares me. I think the Rams win by a field goal. So I'm going to take the New England side, not because I think they have a shot at winning per se, but I think the line's just a little too wide. It's like, to me, this line needs to be closer to a 3 or 3.5, but 5.5, you know, you're talking, you need a touchdown. I'm not confident enough in the Rams to be disciplined to get the job done, because we just saw Monday night where they were very sloppy. It's not even as though the Rams have a good defense. Like, Miami missed a lot of points on the board on Monday night. Like, Miami honestly should have blown out the Rams. As poorly as the Rams were playing, Miami should have blown them out. So that's where I kind of look at this and say, it's like, Drake May has at least shown some signs of adapting to NFL life. So I'm going to take the New England side just because I'm not seeing where the Rams are disciplined enough to blow them out. I think this is a tight game and they win by a field goal. But I'm not feeling the love with the Rams being able to win by a touchdown.
I see what you're talking about. You know, because it worries me too. You know,
talking about games I want nothing to do with. New Orleans hosting the Browns. The Saints 2.5-point favorites at home, but man, like, talk about games you need to skip.
that's the one good thing with Red Zone, that Red Zone, if the game is not really interested, unless they get a touchdown or a great defensive play, they don't show you much. So that's, you say thank God for Red Zone.
I mean, this game will have highlights just because it's Jameis, and it's Jameis going back to New Orleans, so you know Jameis is going to sling it, but, man, I have no interest in this game. It's like, I don't want to bet it. Because, like, neither one of these teams is reliable enough to be counted upon to do basic things. So it's like, even when you're trying to pick this game, there's bound to be at least one or two boneheaded plays on both sides that leave you scratching your head as to what are you doing. That I don't have a great read on this game. It's like, if you're telling me the Saints are favored, I guess, because you could say they're at home and Cleveland's unreliable, but I would just take the Browns side and call it a day and hope for the best. But, man, it's like, this is just an ugly game.
No, I just leave this game alone. Yeah, I just leave this game alone because, you know, I'm done. You know, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think we're both in the same boat where we just take Cleveland, but yeah, like I don't have any confidence in either one of these things. It's like, forget that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is the actual game people want to see. Baltimore going to Pittsburgh. Steelers, 3.5-point underdogs at home to the Ravens. Even though the Steelers are 7-2, they are 3.5-point underdogs at home.
Well, look, let me tell you something with this game. The problem I have, look, as good as Baltimore looks at times, football to me is still, especially in the playoffs, it's still about defense. And this Baltimore team, you know, I mean, you see when they get it together on offense, they just reel off points like against Cincinnati. But again, it's the problem I have is that too many times, you see receivers running wild and defenders looking around at I thought you was going there, you know, like, what? I don't like to see that. I don't like to see where defense is looking confused on so many different plays, you know, when the game is on the line. Too many times. And Baltimore has way too much of that for me. I think this is going to come back and bite them in the ass in the playoffs if they don't straighten this out. They got to straighten this out. You know, I like the Steelers in this game. One, because they're home. And I think the Steelers look better on both sides of the ball. Well, not look better. Baltimore looks better in offense. But I think the Steelers look good enough on offense to keep up, you know, and the defense is so much better that I think they can keep this game close, and I think the Steelers can win it.
Yeah. All right, so here's my long and short of it. It's Ravens-Steelers. You know both these teams are going to play hard, and it's going to come down to execution. My issue with the Ravens is they have shown more of a tendency, as you correctly mentioned, to have F-ups in the secondary in critical spots that give away points. To me, I need this line closer. If you're giving me this many points to the Steelers, I have to take the Steelers side. I don't think this is that sharp of a bet like to go for the Ravens. To me, I'd rather just take the Steelers side, and I'll throw it into a teaser. Yeah, can the Ravens win by a touchdown? Yeah, they can win by four, like in cover to three. But realistically, this game's probably going to come down to a field goal. And the other issue for the Ravens is Justin Tucker has been so has had a drop off in his kicking form. I can't even rely on that. Like that was one of the calling cards of the Ravens where they get in scoring range. They're at least getting three because Justin Tucker's going to be able to hit a 50-yard field goal. I can't rely on that right now. So the biggest issue with the Ravens is they got to get touchdowns every time they're in the scoring scoring potential because the automatic 40-plus yard field goal that you were getting from Justin Tucker and then he would boom the 55-yard field goals, those things are over right now. They got it. They can't assume that they can get the three.
Well, I'm wondering if he's injured.
It's possible. It's possibly overcompensating for something because like we're saying to folks is I've never seen a kicker have a drop off this steep.
This is their career.
So to me, it's either some type of injury or he's lost his confidence in his form and something's off with his form because it didn't, from what I'm hearing from the Ravens, it's not like they changed up, his long snapper or his holder. So it's just, you know, something's up, but it's like, I think it's going to come into play again. It's like, unless Justin Tucker is back to being Justin Tucker, I think the Ravens are in trouble here. It's like, I don't think this is a spot where you can afford a couple of missed kicks. Like, I think this is going to come down to a field goal, and I don't love the Ravens side. If I need the hook for the 3.5, like, I'm going to just take the Steelers side because I'm not sold on the Ravens being, clicking on all cylinders. Derrick Henry's having an MVP year, but at the same time, if Derrick Henry wasn't having an MVP year, the Ravens would not be 7-3. Like, that's the issue. Like, the Ravens would be a below 500 team if they didn't have Derrick Henry this year.
Yeah, the way they give away points on offense, on defense, sorry. Yeah. I sign up for that, you know, because the fact that you got to stack the box against Derrick Henry gives Lamar time to do stuff on offense. Yeah. But the problem is they turn right back around and give it away on defense.
And the thing is that the Ravens still make plays. That's not to say, but what we're saying is when you're going against the very good and the elite teams, you can't have these issues. And that's what worries me about the Ravens is that everyone keeps sleeping on the Steelers saying that it's smoke and mirrors. The Steelers are that. It's like the Steelers are solid across the board and Russ has given them the added dimension of the deep ball. And the reason why Kenny Pickett didn't work out is because Kenny Pickett could not throw accurate enough deep balls or run the offense efficiently. And while Justin Fields can run the ball to be accurate, he doesn't have the touch on the deep ball. They haven't had a deep ball since, and again, the last 2 years of Big Ben, he could not throw
a deep ball. You got to throw it out.
It's like the last couple of years, the Steelers legitimately have not had a deep vertical passing game in the better part of five years. So this is why you have to take the Steelers seriously again, because when the Steelers can run the ball and throw the ball and play defense, that's when the Steelers are at their most dangerous, because you can't take anything for granted when you're playing them, because if you fall behind, it is very hard to get back in the game. So to me, this is a game where the Ravens have to get off to a good start and control clock. If they let the Steelers get ahead and burn clock and do what they want to do on defense, it could be a very frustrating day for Lamar. So I'm curious to see this game. I'm really curious how it plays out.
Let me tell you one of the problems I have with Baltimore. Baltimore cannot allow the opposition to have the ball last. Because if they have the ball last, and there's any time on the clock, as long as there's a good quarterback there, Baltimore is in trouble. I mean, that game the other night against Cincinnati, the only reason Baltimore survived in that game is because the refs missed two defensive holdings. Both the hit on the quarterback's helmet and the holding the tight end in the end zone. That's it. You know, Baltimore cannot stop people on defense right now. Any team is going to march down the field on them and score. So they have to be up by a couple of touchdowns, you know, or they have to be on offense at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I like the Steelers. Yeah.
So, all right, this one should be quick. Next game. Minnesota and Tennessee. Vikings 6.5-point favorites on the road.
Okay, let's take the Vikings. I'm done with it.
Yeah. The less said about Will Levis, the better. I'm on the Vikings as well.
The Titans are just like the Jets. They're looking for a quarterback.
Yeah. I don't like how you said that about Aaron. I think we need to revisit something when we get to the Jets. Next up, interesting game here because this is a classic game where Atlanta doesn't show up. But Falcons traveling to Mile High to play the Broncos. Broncos are 1.5-point favorites.
I'll take the Broncos.
No confidence in Kirk?
No, not after that game. I couldn't believe that they lost that game last week. How you lose that game? How do you lose that game?
That was such a classic, because we always say this about Kirk. It's like Kirk Cousins finds ways of losing games where you're just stunned that he lost a game that they should have been overall. Because like there's a reason why Kirk always ends up in these spots where, you know, he makes the playoffs, but he's not, like, overwhelmingly, like, a top seed or anything. It's because he loses games like he did last week against the Saints. It's like, it was inexplicable how the Falcons managed to lose that game. There's no way they could lose that game to the Saints.
Yeah. It's the reason why Kirk Cousins, with all the money he made and all those things like what he did in Minnesota and whatever, that people still has no kind of respect for him as a top flight quarterback because of last week. I don't know. It's like, hey, wait a minute. Are we actually going to be a first place here? I can't afford that. It's like, how do you lose that game?
But I will say this, Callie, because of how dysfunctional last week was, this is why I think the Falcons win this week. It's because of how dysfunctional last week was that I think the Falcons offense shows up this week, even though Denver's defense has been pretty solid. I think the Falcons actually have one of those random one-off performances where they win the game. Everyone says, oh, I guess we got to take the Falcons for real. And then we go right back into the yo-yo effect.
So to me, I
completely, logic says you take the Broncos side here because 1.5 at home against a dome team. Yeah. Logic says you take the Broncos side. I'm just looking at it, the illogical side of how the Falcons and Kirk Cousins usually play. It's the yo-yo effect of the games that they really shouldn't be winning. They find a way to win, and I think that's what happens here. So I'm going to take the Atlanta side here, even though logically they should not be winning this game. But I think they find a way to get it done.
So you're saying once the pressure is off of him, then he'll perform?
Yes.
Okay. I see your logic. Yeah. I like the Broncos, though. If they play anywhere close to how they played last week, because they could have beaten the Chiefs. I mean, they played that last 2 minutes as you would be proud to say, that's how you do it. You bleed the clock right down, you don't give the ball back, and you kick the field goal and go home. I how that didn't work out, I don't know. If I didn't watch that game live, you know, you can see it's a movie, they made it up. Yeah.
All right, Callie. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to be right back after this break. So stay tuned, folks. All right, and we're back. So for this closing stretch, Callie, we have, outside of, you know, our favorite team, Our favorite team that not named the Giants, the Jets hosting the Colts. Originally, this was going to be Sunday Night Football, but because we can flex out games, we don't have to deal with the Jets.
Because there's a God. Because there's a God in it.
The Jets, 3.5-point favorites over the Colts.
the Jets as actually a favorite?
If you see the Colts play, I get why, because the Colts are not in a good place right now. They're going back to Anthony Richardson as expected because of, you know, they're not a good team and Joe Flacco cannot help a bad, like, if you put Joe Flacco on a good team, he can make you look good. If you put Joe Flacco on a bad team, Joe Flacco's going to make him look worse. And that's what happened with Indy. It's like, teams start to figure out what Indy was able to do and shut it down pretty quickly.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about this. And I hate to be doing this to say that I'm taking the Jets side, but here's the thing with Indy. If you're a player on Indy right now, you're a running back or a wide receiver or whatever, especially if he's a veteran, and you told me, look, I think we still have a chance to make the playoffs, so I'm going to sit down with Richardson because he's not learning fast enough, and I don't want to waste you guys, you know, whatever, whatever. Right? You put in Flacco. Okay, you lost the two games. What are you going to tell those guys now? Well, no, we don't have a chance, so I'm putting it back in. How is he going to perform? Because that's basically what you're telling them. Yeah. Oh, we tried it, didn't work, it's over. So we're just going to put the young guy and give him experience. That's what you're going to tell a veteran player?
This is why Jim Mersey screwed this up when he had, when he was, as usual, listening to talk radio, got upset at Anthony Richardson and benched him without thinking this one through. By not thinking this one through, they did a rush decision to bench Anthony Richardson when the team wasn't ready for him to be benched yet. So now you're slotting him back in because you're like, oh, we really aren't going to make the playoffs this year. No, duh, you weren't making the playoffs, period. But because you thought you could, you made that rush decision to Flacco, and now you're stuck in this spot where, you know, play it out, guys. The rally around Anthony. It's like, I don't know. It's like, to me, the Jets know they're not making the playoffs, but now they have to, like, stay face. And then you got this Indy team that, you know, again, they don't know if the coach is going to survive. Like, it's Jim Mersey. He could fire everyone in Indy at the end of the year, and no one would bat an eyelash. So, to me, Anthony Richardson is playing for his job right now, along with everyone else on that team. That's why I actually think the Colts show up today. I think there's a dangerous spot for the Jets. You know, again, what are the Jets playing for? What exactly are the Jets playing for? Because they're 3-7. I mean, you got to run the table to make the playoffs at this stage. I don't know if they got it in them. Like, that to me, that's the scary part with the Jets. It's just that even if they were motivated, Are they that much better of a team than the Colts? Like, I know Woody Johnson thinks so, but I know more football than Woody Johnson does, so I can say that. It's like, realistically, the issues on the Jets with not being able to stop the run and the fact that their offense looks slow and predictable, they haven't fixed any of their issues since that started to begin the year. So to me, I actually think there's a better chance that the Colts show up for this game motivated because they're playing for job security versus the Jets where, you know, everyone's just looking at Aaron wondering, okay, what's Aaron got to say about this?
Yeah, look, let me tell you something. Sometimes, and I don't want to say I told you so, but I told Jets fans this 2 years ago when everybody was going gaga, oh, we could get Aaron Rodgers. And I said, wait a minute. He's been in Green Bay. They went to one Super Bowl. He's had a good team every year. And to me, yeah, he won the MVP, but what did the team win? He does everything for himself. Yeah, that's how he's been. He complained about that team in Green Bay. Oh, the guys are young, they're inexperienced, they don't know what they want to do. Of course, you're not practicing with them, so I don't know how they're going to know what to do. Now, they've been making the playoff for the last 2 years with the same players that you said were no good. And now you come here, and yeah, last year was a pass. Yeah, and I guess they just realized, hey, it's a good thing he didn't come back for Christmas Eve, because this is what you would have got. It would have been worse. You know, he does not do anything, you know, to make the team any better. And I've been seeing this for a while. You know, I know Davante Adams is his good friend, but I never understood why is it if you could have gone to another team like the Chiefs or, you know, the Bills or why is it you wanted to come to the Jets?
The power of friendship. The power of friendship.
You got to be kidding me. I got to be married to you to be that close. You got to be kidding me. I saw this coming. You know? So, the only reason I think I would pick the Jets today is that he's got to show them something. He's got to have at least one good game to hang your hat on. And this is it. You're playing against a quarterback that barely has a clue what he's doing, because Anthony Richardson has a lot of talent, but I don't know, between the ears, you know, I don't think he has a lot. And I don't think he's in the best place to learn that, you know, because this is a team that got Peyton Manning to leave town and Andrew Luck to retire before time, you know, so I wouldn't expect much from it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a mess. It's a mess with both of those teams. I don't know where they go from here. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I mean, it's a mess of a game. It is what it is, but it's like, I think maybe you might get some desperation from the Colts. The Jets, I mean, if they couldn't show any desperation in Arizona, why would they show desperation today? I was like, I don't know. Moving on. San Francisco. Hosting Seattle, it's likely that George Kittle's missing today's game, but the Niners are favored by 6.5.
I think that's a lot. You know, I think that's a lot, especially without Kittle. Look.
And DK Metcalf's back for Seattle. So, to me, I look at this game, it's a weird one. Because I love Seattle for teasers, just to throw that in, because 6.5 is just too wide of a number. But at the same time, I could see where the 49ers defense can make a play to cover that. But I look at that as like Seattle's number is so wide, that's an obvious teaser spot. And I'm okay with using Seattle on teasers, even though I don't love betting the Seattle side of this game. I think this one where San Fran wins. Maybe they win by a touchdown. I can't see them blowing out Seattle. But, you know, I have no issues with folks that want to take the Seattle side of the argument, because, frankly, we haven't seen enough out of the Niners to be consistent enough. Even with McCaffrey back, not having Kittle does change things up a bit in terms of some of the run protection schemes and the pass blocking. So I think it ends up being a case where San Fran wins. We'll see what the end result ends up being. But to me, 6.5, I love using that to throw the Seattle side into teasers. So I could probably tease a couple of these games where, you know, I already like the Steelers. So I'll tease Seattle and the Steelers together with the points. And then we're going to get to the Kansas City Buffalo game. But it's like, some of these games, I'm definitely okay with throwing into teasers and using Seattle, because I think that game plays close. Maybe San Fran covers, but 6.5 is a lot. Like in a divisional game where Seattle's not an awful team, this is a tricky one for San Fran.
Yeah, and they play each other hard in that division. So I don't know. That's too much for me.
Yeah. So I'm okay with the Seattle side for teasers. I think San Fran wins, but the line is wide. It is wide.
Yeah.
So moving on, Buffalo hosting Kansas City. The Bills 2.5-point favorites over the Chiefs. The undefeated Chiefs. The Chiefs that routinely beat Buffalo. I want to know where this narrative is that we're disrespectful of Buffalo by making them a home underdog when literally in this spot the Chiefs have beaten Buffalo multiple times. I really want to know how the Chiefs are the underdog here when we've seen this script before with the Chiefs going into Buffalo to beat Buffalo. It's not as though this is like a foreign environment to them. I actually wanted to know, why are the Chiefs underdogs in this game?
I think they just assume that that Buffalo always wins in the regular season and the Chiefs win the playoff game. I think that's what everybody is saying.
Because to me, this is a teaser spot. Like, between Seattle and Kansas City and Pittsburgh, that's a easy three-team teaser to just throw it, because even with a win, I'm not seeing Buffalo beating the Chiefs by more than a field goal. Yeah, maybe Buffalo covers the game, but to me, I think it's easy to just take the Chiefs as an underdog and throw them into a teaser. So you bump them up to 8.5, you get the Seahawks in there and the Steelers in there. Like for a 3-team teaser, like I don't know. Me personally, I thought this line should have gone the other way with the Chiefs favored, and you have to kind of make a choice of, do I think Buffalo can win this game? Yeah, Buffalo could win this game, but like when you set the line at 2.5, you know, yeah, it's like, okay, can Buffalo win by a field goal? Yeah, but there's still a better than 50% chance the Chiefs win this game. And to me, I have to take the Chiefs side of this one. It's like, again, the public money is going to be on the Chiefs just because everyone's seen the Chiefs do this so many times. But I'd be shocked if the public money wasn't on the Chiefs. Because the Chiefs as an underdog just screams the public is just going to bet this, but I don't think it's a bad bet. Like, to me, I think this line needs to be Chiefs' favor on the road, and then you have to make the decision whether or not you want to take the Bills as a home underdog.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Here's the way I look at this game. Literally, this is how you know the NFL, the sportsbook losing money, because the Chiefs and the Lions have been winning so much as favorites. They made the Chiefs an underdog and are hoping all the public is betting on the Chiefs so they can make back their money if Buffalo wins. Literally, that's what this is. But I'm sorry, it just feels very transparent that it's like the reason why this line is Chiefs as an underdog is because they want the public all on the Chiefs side and the sports books to try to win some money back on the Bills side. Because I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing how the Bills should be the favorite in this game.
Yeah. I like I said, to me, the only reason I think they did it is because they think that because if I'm not mistaken, Buffalo has won every regular season game against the Chiefs.
I think they haven't lost
a regular season game. They just lost all the playoff games.
So
that's why I think they're saying this trend is going to continue. And that in that, all those miracle wins that the Chiefs has, that Buffalo can become one of those. Because the Chiefs have won some games that, like, oh my God, how did they do that? I mean, the game against the Ravens by a toe, you know, last week, the Rocky goal. I mean,
yeah.
Some kind of miraculous escape.
Yeah. No. I get it from that standpoint, but if we're just looking at how these teams have played this year, the Chiefs have been the better team. Like all the close calls the Chiefs have had, close calls too. And it's just like, I just feel as though this is one where they're trying to get the public to bet on the Chiefs side and hope that the Bills find a way to win this game. Like, I feel that's where this is going. But, Sunday Night Football. So this is the new Sunday Night Football matchup. Bengals traveling to LA to play the Chargers. Chargers 1.5-point favorites.
I like the Chargers. I like the Chargers. The Chargers represent to have a competent competent coach. This is a solid defense. Not only them in offense, but good enough that, you know, I think they can win this game.
I mean, the Chargers are solid enough. I just look at it from the standpoint of the Bengals have to be desperate. And like, in terms of if this game plays with like a couple of mistakes, the Chargers are going to win this game. If the Bengals actually play to their ability, they're going to beat the Chargers. Will we see the Bengals play to their ability? Hard to tell because this team is just so flaky. So, in my opinion, I'm going to take the Bengals side just because they got to have this game. If they lose this game, the season's over, essentially, because their division is too tough to get run the table in if they don't get this not a non-division game. So, to me, the Bengals have to win this game. If they don't play with that urgency, then I know the season's over. So I'm going to take the Bengals side because if they lose it, team's over. So we already have our answer as to what the Bengals are going to do this year.
Look, I know they can't fire the coach, but he hasn't been that bad.
He has been that bad. It's just that they win games, so it masks how bad Zach Taylor is. But Zach Taylor...
Well, you and I may be in a minority, but we have never liked that. We have never liked that coach. I even the year that they went to the Super Bowl, I thought that, you know, he did not get a job. But making these late runs and ending up in the playoffs. But my thing is this. If you're that good a coach, how is it you can't make a confident start? Why is it it's always 0-2, 0-3? You're behind the eight ball. So you keep playing uphill. I don't like that. You know,
it doesn't prep the team problem. There's so many issues I have with Zach Taylor. But it's been going off for years with the Bengals, but the Bengals are cheap, so they will keep, even if they miss the playoffs this year, he will come back next year because the Bengals are cheap. They're not going to fire him. He wins enough. They're not going to fire him. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, people's going to say, you guys don't know what you're talking about because look at the guy's record. He did this, he did that, he did this, he did that. Even in the Super Bowl, I thought those were some of the lousiest plays. I know Aaron Donald made some great defensive plays, but I didn't like the play calls. You know, I didn't like the play calls.
Yeah.
So It is what it is with Zach Taylor.
All right, and we're gonna close out the week with Monday Night Football with an early bedtime. Texans traveling to Dallas, a very big trip for the Texans. Texans 7.5-point favorites. The good news is because it's Monday Night Football, Jerry does not have to use the curtains.
Why, the sun don't come out in the night in Dallas? You telling me the sun don't shine at night time in Dallas? It's too precious. It's too precious. Jerry Jones. Oh my God. Look, let me tell you something. Nico Collins is back, so it should be the Texans should fatten up on because I think right now that Dallas team is driving around with their golf clubs.
They're driving around like Michael Parsons was honking the horn, basically saying y'all are holding up our golf game by keeping Mike McCarthy employed. It's like, we got to get going. And like, listen, my fear for Dallas is the fact that they allow the Giants to beat them. It's like the next time they face each other. It's like, I need Dallas to at least keep it somewhat professional to close out the year, but Dallas may be in full tank mode, come Monday night. And so I want to see what they show, but it's not going to shock me if the rest of this year is just Dallas just tanking in the most egregious way possible to get a high draft pick.
Well, the only team I know that don't even know how to tank to get a high draft pick is the Giants. So it's because even when we're in line to get high draft picks, we figure out a way to win games. Winning up games just to mess us up.
Yeah, but anyway, Callie, we gotta wrap it up there. Just so we get the episode wrapped up. But yeah, I will call you during the games. But thanks again, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, take it easy, Tom.
All right, take it easy.
All right,
folks, that's gonna do it for us. We're gonna get on out of here. So best of luck with your lineups today and all your picks in your leagues. But, yeah, I mean, to me, this is a very much a Detroit Lions type of slate with the 49ers. We'll see how the Chiefs-Bills game goes, but I think that one ends up being lower scoring. Even though it'll be popular, I just don't see that having as much fireworks as what you're going to get with some of these other contests. So that'll do it for us, and yeah, have a good afternoon. Enjoy the games.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all major outlets.
88% of the work week is spent communicating. Typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.